Mr. Speaker, this Labour government was elected to bring change to our country, to provide security for working people and to deliver a decade of national renewal. That work began in July, and I am proud of what we have delivered in just 9 months. Restoring stability to our public finances, giving the Bank of England the foundation to cut interest rates 3 times since the general election, rebuilding our public services with record investment in our NHS, bringing waiting lists down for 5 months in a row, and increasing the national living wage to give 3 million people a pay rise from next week. Now our task is to secure Britain's future in a world that is changing before our eyes. The threat facing our continent was transformed when Putin invaded Ukraine. It has since escalated further and will continue to evolve rapidly. At the same time, the global economy has become more uncertain, bringing insecurity at home as trading patterns become more unstable and borrowing costs rise for many major economies. Mr. Speaker, the job of a responsible government is not simply to watch this change. This moment demands an active government, a government not stepping back, but stepping up. A government on the side of working people, helping Britain to reach its potential. And Mr. Speaker, we have the strength to do just that. As one of the world's largest economies, an ally to trading partners across the globe, and a hub for global innovation. These strengths and the progress that we have made so far mean that we can act quickly and decisively in a more uncertain world to secure Britain's future and to deliver prosperity for working people. Mr. Speaker, as I set out at the budget last year, I am today returning to the House to provide an update on our public finances, supported by a new forecast from the Independent Office for Budget Responsibility. Ahead of a full spending review in June, I will then return to the House in the autumn to deliver a budget in line with our commitment to deliver just one major fiscal event a year. So let me now turn to the OBR's forecasts. And I want to thank Richard Hughes and his team for their dedicated work. The increased global uncertainty has had 2 consequences. First, on our public finances, and second, on our economy. I will take each in turn. In the autumn, I set out our new fiscal rules that would guide this government. These fiscal rules are non-negotiable. They are the embodiment of this government's unwavering commitment to bring stability to our economy and to ensure security for working people. Because the British people have seen what happens when a government borrows beyond their means. The mini budget delivered by the party opposite resulted in higher bills, in higher rents and higher mortgages. And Mr. Speaker, it was not the wealthy who suffered most when they crushed the economy. It was ordinary working people. And they continue to feel the effects 2.5 years later of the damage that the party opposite did. Now, let me be clear. There is nothing progressive, there is nothing Labour about working people paying the price for economic irresponsibility. British people put their trust in this Labour government because they knew that I would never take risks with the public finances. That we would never do anything to put household finances in danger. And we must earn that trust every single day. The 2 rules that I set out at the budget were first, our stability rule, which ensures that public spending is under control, balancing the current budget by 2029-30, so that day-to-day spending is met by tax receipts. Second, our investment rule, to drive growth in the economy, ensuring that net financial debt falls by the end of the forecast period, while enabling us to invest alongside business. Turning first to the stability rule, the OBR's forecast shows that before the steps that I will take in this statement, the current budget would have been in deficit by £4.1 billion in 2029-30, having been in surplus by £9.9 billion in the autumn. As the UK, alongside our international peers like France and Germany, has seen the cost of borrowing rise during this period of heightened uncertainty in global markets. As a result of the steps that I am taking today, I can confirm that I have restored in full our headroom against the stability rule. Moving from a deficit of £36.1 billion in 2025-26 and £13.4 billion in 2026-27 to a surplus of £6.0 billion in 27-28, £7.1 billion in 2028-29, and a surplus of £9.9 billion in 2029-30. That compares to the headroom left by the previous government of just £6.5 billion. That means we are continuing to meet the stability rule 2 years early, building resilience to shocks in this, a more uncertain world. The OBR forecast that the investment rule is also met 2 years early, with net financial debt of 82.9% of GDP in 25-26 and 83.5% in 26-27, before falling to 83.4% in 27-28, in 83.2% in 2028-29, and then to 82.7% in 2029-30, providing headroom of £15.1 billion in the final year of the forecast, broadly unchanged from the autumn. After the last government doubled the national debt, debt interest... After they doubled the national debt, debt interest payments now stand at £105.2 billion this year. Mr Speaker, that is more than we allocate to Defence, the Home Office and the Ministry of Justice combined. That is the legacy of the party opposite. So the responsible choice is to reduce our levels of debt and borrowing in the years ahead so that we can spend more on the priorities of working people, and that is exactly what this government will do. Yeah. Mr Speaker, I said that our fiscal rules were non-negotiable, and I meant it. I will always deliver economic stability, and I will always put working people first. I said it at the election, I said it at the budget, and I say it again today. Let me now set out the steps that the government has taken. At the budget, we protected working people by keeping our promise not to raise their rates of national insurance, income tax or VAT. At the same time, we began to rebuild our public services after the party opposite left a £22 billion black hole in our public finances. Ours were the right choices. The right choices for stability and the right choices for renewal, funded by the decisions that we took on tax. As I promised in the autumn, this statement does not contain any further tax increases. But when working people are paying their taxes while still struggling with the cost of living, it cannot be right that others are still evading what they rightly owe in tax. In the budget, I delivered the most ambitious package of measures that we have ever seen to cut down on tax evasion, raising £6.5 billion per year by the end of the forecast. Today, I go further, continuing our investment in cutting-edge technology, investing in the HMRC's capacity to crack down on tax avoidance, and setting out plans to increase the number of tax fraudsters charged every year by 20%. These changes raise a further £1 billion, taking the total revenue raised from reducing tax evasion under this Labour government to £7.5 billion. These figures are verified by the Office for Budget Responsibility, and I want to thank my honourable friend, the Exchequer Secretary, for his continued work in this area. Mr Speaker, Last week, my right honourable friend, the Secretary of State for Work and Pensions, set out this government's plans to reform the welfare system. The Labour Party is the party of work. We believe that if you can work, you should work. But if you can't work, you should be properly supported. This government inherited a broken system. More than 1,000 people every day are qualifying for personal independence payments. 1 in 8 young people are not in employment, education, or training. If we do nothing, we are writing off an entire generation. That cannot be right, and we will not stand for it. It is a waste of their potential, and it is a waste of their futures, and we will change it. As my right honourable friend said in her statement last week, the final costings would be subject to the OBR's assessment. Today, the OBR have said that they estimate that the package will save £4.8 billion in the welfare budget, reflecting their judgments on behavioural effects and wider factors. This also reflects final adjustments to the overall package, consistent with the Secretary of State's statement last week and the government's Pathways to Work Green Paper. The Universal Credit Standard Allowance will increase from £92 per week in 25-26 to £106 a week by 29-30, while the Universal Credit Health Element will be cut for new claimants by around 50% and then frozen. On top of this, we are investing £1 billion to provide guaranteed, personalised employment support to help people back into work. And £400 million to support the Department for Work and Pensions and our job centres to deliver these changes effectively and fairly, taking total savings after that to the package to £3.4 billion. While spending on disability and sickness benefits will continue to rise, these plans mean that welfare spending as a share of GDP will fall between 2026 and the end of the forecast period, very different to what we inherited from the party opposite. We are reforming our welfare system, making it more sustainable, protecting the most vulnerable, and most importantly, supporting more people back into secure work, lifting them out of poverty. Mr. Speaker, at the budget, I fixed the foundations of our economy to deliver on the promise of change. That work has already begun. 2 million extra appointments in our NHS. Waiting lists down. New breakfast clubs opening across England. The largest settlements in real terms for Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland in the history of devolution. Asylum costs falling, promises made, promises kept, and every single one of them opposed by the parties opposite. At the budget, alongside providing an increase in funding for this year and next, I set the envelope for the spending review, which we will deliver in June, led by my right honourable friend, the Chief Secretary to the Treasury, to set departmental budgets until 28-29 for day-to-day spending and until 2029-30 for capital spending. Today I'm reflecting two steps that we have taken on our spending plans. First, because we are living in an uncertain world, as the Prime Minister has set out, we will increase defence spending to 2.5% of GDP, reducing overseas aid to 0.3% of gross national income. This means we save £2.6 billion in day-to-day spending in 2029-30 to fund our more capital-intensive defence commitments. Second, in recent months, we have begun to fundamentally reform the British state, driving efficiency and productivity across government to deliver tangible savings and improve services across our country. Earlier this Prime Minister, the Prime Minister set out plans to abolish the arms-length body NHS England and ensure that that money goes directly to improving the service for patients. My right honourable friend, the Health Secretary, is driving forward vital reforms to increase NHS productivity, bearing down on costly agency spend to save money so that we can improve patient care. And my right honourable friend, the Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, is taking forward work to significantly reduce the costs of running government by 15%, worth £2 billion by the end of the decade. This work shows that we can make our state leaner and more agile, delivering more resources to the front line, while ensuring that we control day-to-day spending to meet our fiscal rules. Today, I build on that work by bringing forward £3.25 billion of investment to deliver the reforms that our public services need through a new transformation fund. That is money brought forward now to bring down the costs of running government by the end of the forecast period. By making public services more efficient, more productive, and more focused on the user. Yep. I can confirm today the first allocations from this fund, including funding for voluntary exit schemes to reduce the size of the civil service, pioneering AI tools to modernise the state, investment in top technology for the Ministry of Justice to deliver probation services more effectively, and upfront investment so we can support more children into foster care to give them the best possible start in life and reduce cost pressures in the future. Our work to make government leaner, more productive and more efficient will help deliver a further £3.5 billion of day-to-day savings by 2029-30. Overall, day-to-day spending will be reduced by £6.1 billion in 2029-30, and it will now grow by an average of 1.2% a year above inflation, compared to 1.3% in the autumn. Mr. Speaker, I can confirm to the House that day-to-day spending will increase in real terms above inflation in every single year of the forecast. And in the spending review, apart from the reductions in overseas aid, day-to-day spending across government has been fully protected. I can also confirm our approach to capital investment. In the autumn budget, I announced £100 billion of additional capital spending to crowd in investment from the private sector, to fix our crumbling infrastructure, and to create jobs in every corner of our country. Today, I am not cutting capital spending, as the party opposite did time and time again, because that choked off growth, and it left our school roofs literally crumbling. That was the wrong choice. It was the irresponsible choice. It was the Tory choice. Today, I am instead increasing capital spending by an average of £2 billion per year compared with the autumn to drive growth in our economy and to deliver in full our vital commitments on defence. This government will ensure that every pound we spend will deliver for the British people by increasing productivity, driving growth in our economy and improving our frontline public services. Mr. Speaker, let me turn now to the impact of increased uncertainty on our economy. To deliver economic stability, we must work closely with the Bank of England, supporting the Independent Monetary Policy Committee to meet their 2% inflation target. There have been three interest rate cuts since the general election, and today's data showed that inflation fell in February. Having peaked at 11% under the previous government, the OBR forecast that CPI inflation will average 3.2% this year before falling rapidly to 2.1% in 2026 and meeting the 2% target from 2027 onwards, giving families and businesses the security that they need and providing our economy with the stable platform it needs to grow. Mr. Speaker, earlier this month, the OECD downgraded this year's growth forecast for every G7 economy, including the UK. And the OBR have today revised down our growth forecast for 2025, from 2% in the autumn to 1% today. I am not satisfied with these numbers, and that is why we on this side of the House are serious about taking the action needed to grow our economy. Backing the builders, not the blockers, with a third runway at Heathrow Airport and the Planning and Infrastructure Bill. Increasing investment with reforms to our pension system and a new national wealth fund. And tearing down regulatory barriers in every sector of our economy. That is a serious plan for growth. That is a serious plan to improve living standards. That is a serious plan to renew our country. Mr. Speaker, a changing world presents challenges, but it also presents new opportunities for new jobs and new contracts. in our world-class defence industrial centres, from Belfast to Deeside and from Plymouth to Rosyth. In February, the Prime Minister set out our government's commitment to increase spending on defence to 2.5% of GDP from April 2027, the biggest sustained increase in defence spending since the end of the Cold War, with an ambition to spend 3% of GDP on defence in the next Parliament. That was the right decision in a more insecure world, putting an extra £6.4 billion into defence spending by 2027. But we have to move quickly in this changing world, and that starts with investment. So today I can confirm that I will provide an additional £2.2 billion for the Ministry of Defence in the next financial year, a further down payment on our plans to deliver 2.5% of GDP by 2027. This additional investment is not just about increasing our national security, but increasing our economic security too. As defence spending rises, I want the whole country to feel its benefits. So I will now set out the immediate steps that we are taking to boost Britain's defence industry and to make the UK a defence industrial superpower. We will spend a minimum of 10% of the Ministry of Defence's equipment budget on new novel technologies, including drones and AI-enabled technology, driving forward advanced manufacturing production in places like Glasgow, in Derby and in Newport, creating demand for highly skilled engineers and scientists, and delivering new business opportunities for UK tech firms and startups. We will establish a protected budget of £400 million within the Ministry of Defence, a budget that will rise over time for UK defence innovation, with a clear mandate to bring innovative technology to the front line at speed. And we will reform our broken defence procurement system, making it quicker, more agile and more streamlined, and giving small businesses across the UK better access to Ministry of Defence contracts, something welcomed by the Federation of Small Businesses. We will take forward our plan for Barrow, a town at the heart of our nuclear security, working with my honourable friend, the member for Barrow and Furness, and providing £200 million, supporting the creation of thousands of jobs there. We will regenerate Portsmouth Naval Base, securing its future, as called for by my honourable friend, the member for Portsmouth South. We will secure better homes for thousands of military families, the homes that they deserve denied to them by the previous government. Homes for our military families in constituencies of my honourable friends for Plymouth Moorview, Plymouth Sutton and Devonport, York Outer and in Aldershot. That is the difference that this Labour government is making. Finally, Mr. Speaker, we will provide £2 billion of increased capacity for UK export finance to provide loans for overseas buyers of UK defence goods and services, because I want to do more with our defence budget so we can buy and make and sell things here in Britain. Giving further opportunities for our world-leading defence companies and those who work in them to grow and create jobs here in Britain as military spending rightly increases all across Europe. To oversee all of this vital work, my right honourable friend, the Defence Secretary, and I will establish a new Defence Growth Board to maximise the benefits from every pound of taxpayers' money that we spend. And we will put defence at the heart of our modern industrial strategy to drive innovation that can deliver huge benefits back into the British economy. Mr. Speaker, that is how we make our country a defence industrial superpower. So the skills of the future, the jobs of the future, and the opportunities of the future can be found right here in the United Kingdom. Mr. Speaker, as the previous government learned to their detriment, there are no shortcuts to economic growth. It will take long-term decisions. It will take hard yards. It will take time for the reforms that we are introducing to be felt in the everyday economy. It is right that the Office for Budget Responsibility consider the evidence and look carefully at measures before recognising a growth impact in their forecast. But, Mr. Speaker, I can announce to the House that the OBR have considered and have scored one of the central planks of our plan for growth. In my first week as Chancellor, I announced that we were pursuing the most ambitious set of planning reforms in decades to get Britain building again. And in December, we published changes to the National Planning Policy Framework, driven forward tirelessly by my right honourable friend, the Deputy Prime Minister. Reintroducing mandatory housing targets and bringing grey belt land into scope. The OBR have today concluded that these reforms will permanently increase the level of real GDP by 0.2% in 2029-30, an additional £6.8 billion for our economy, and by 0.4% of GDP within 10 years, an additional £15.1 billion in our British economy. Mr. Speaker, that is the biggest positive growth impact that the OBR have ever reflected in their forecast for a policy with no fiscal cost. And taken together with our plans to increase capital spending that we set out in the budget last year, this government's policies will increase the level of real GDP by 0.6% in the next 10 years. Mr. Speaker, that is the difference that this Labour government is making. Policies to grow our economy. Promises by a Labour government, delivered by a Labour government, opposed by the parties opposite. Mr. Speaker, the planning system that we inherited was far too slow. The OBR have concluded that our reforms will lead to house building reaching a 40-year high. Yeah. 305,000 homes a year by the end of the forecast period. And changes to the National Planning Policy Framework alone will help build over 1.3 million homes in the UK over the next 5 years. Yeah. Taking us within touching distance of delivering our manifesto promise to build 1.5 million homes in England in this Parliament. Homes promised by this Labour government, homes built by this Labour government, homes opposed by the parties opposite. The impact on our economy goes further still. I said at the election that we could not simply tax and spend our way to prosperity. We need economic growth. So I can today confirm that the effect of our growth policies, including our planning reforms, means an additional £3.4 billion to support our public finances and our public services by 2029-30. The proceeds of growth, promised by this Labour government, delivered by this Labour government, opposed by the parties opposite. Mr. Speaker, earlier this week, we provided an additional £2 billion of investment in social and affordable homes next year, delivering up to 18,000 new homes and allowing local areas to bid for new development across our country, including sites in Thanet, in Sunderland and in Swindon. More security for families across our country, promised by this Labour government, delivered by this Labour government and opposed by the parties opposite. And to build these new homes, we need people with the right skills. Earlier this week, my right honourable friend, the Education Secretary, announced more than £600 million to train up 60,000 more construction workers, including with 10 new technical excellence colleges across every region of our country, giving working people the chance to fulfil their potential. New opportunities for our young people. Promised by this Labour government, delivered by this Labour government, opposed by the parties opposite. Mr. Speaker, all this is just the start. The Planning and Infrastructure Bill passed its second reading on Monday. No thanks to the parties opposite. Once this bill completes its passage, it will help deliver the homes and infrastructure our country badly needs. And I say to the parties opposite, the British people will be watching. Because if the parties opposite don't support these reforms, let us be clear about what that means. They are opposing economic growth. They are opposing more homes for families. They are are opposing good jobs across our country. We on this side are clear about whose side we are on. The parties opposite must decide too. This Labour government is taking the right decisions now to secure Britain's future. And today I can confirm to the House that the OBR have upgraded their growth forecast next year and every single year thereafter. With GDP growth of 1.9% in 2026, of 1.8% in 2027, 1.7% in 2028, and 1.8% in 2029. Mr. Speaker, by the end of the forecast, our economy is larger compared to the OBR's forecast at the time of the budget. That is the difference that this Labour government is making. But, Mr. Speaker, this isn't just about lines on a graph. It's about improving people's lives. Working people are still feeling the pinch after a cost of living crisis caused by the party opposite that caused interest rates and inflation to go through the roof. So I am pleased that the OBR confirmed today that real household disposable income will now grow this year at almost twice the rate expected in the autumn. Compared to the forecast in the final budget delivered by the party opposite, and after taking into account inflation, the OBR say today that people will be, on average, over £500 a year better off under this Labour government. That will mean more money in the pockets of working people, higher living standards promised by this Labour government, delivered by this Labour government, opposed by the party's opposite. Mr. Speaker, the world is changing. We can see that and we can feel it. A changing world demands a government that is on the side of working people, acting in their interest, acting in the national interest. Not retreating from challenges, not stepping back, but a government with the courage to step up, to secure Britain's future, and to seize the opportunities that are out there before us. I am impatient for change. The British people are impatient for change after 14 years of failure. And we are beginning to see change happen. Our plan for change is working. Defence spending is rising. Waiting lists are falling. Wages are up. Interest rates are cut. That is the difference that this Labour government is making. And today, Mr. Speaker, the OBR confirm that our plan to get Britain building will drive growth in our economy and put more money in people's pockets. There are no quick fixes, but we have taken the right choices. Returning stability to our economy after years of mismanagement by the party opposite. Delivering security for our country and security for working people. That is what drives this government. That is what drives me as Chancellor. That is what drives the choices that I have set out today. And I commend this statement to the House.
Shadow Chancellor Mel Strye.
Mr. Speaker, at the last budget, the Right Honourable Lady said that she would bring stability to the public finances. Stability to the public finances. But this statement, more appropriately referred to as an emergency budget,
Can I just say to you? Quite right there, I want to hear to the Chancellor. I now want to hear the Shadow Chancellor. I don't need any help.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This emergency budget, Mr. Speaker, has brought the Right Honourable Lady to a cold, hard reckoning. She has become very fond recently to talk about the world having changed. Well, indeed it has, Mr. Speaker. This country was growing at the fastest rate in the G7 only about a year ago. And just as the OECD and the Bank of England and other forecasters, and now we learn today the OBR have stated. Growth has been halved in this year. Cut in two as a consequence of the decisions and the choices that the Right Honourable Lady made on her watch. Inflation, which was down to 2%, bang on target on the very day of the last general election under a Conservative government. We are now told this year we'll be running at twice the level as was forecast under ourselves in 2024. This is going to mean prices bearing down on households and on businesses right across the country because of her choices. And the OBR also says, Mr. Speaker, that unemployment will be rising this year and next year and the year after. And in fact, across the forecast period, it will not decline at all. So much for the Right Honourable Lady's back-to-work plans. And we have already seen, Mr. Speaker, what it means when it comes to controlling borrowing under this Chancellor. And yes, she has come forward now with a plan to squeeze spending later on in the forecast period. And she has, of course, told the OBR that these are the elements of spending restraint to which she will stick. But what do the markets think? And could I ask the Right Honourable Lady, given her track record, given the fact that she has failed to control spending and borrowing to date, what does she think the markets are going to make of her latest promises? But the Right Honourable Lady, Mr. Speaker, says, of course, that none of this is her fault. It is the war in Ukraine. It is President Trump. It is tariffs. It is President Putin. It is the Conservatives. It is her legacy. It is anybody but her. Well, what the British people know, Mr. Speaker, is that this is a consequence of her choices. She is the architect of her own misfortune. It was the Right Honourable Lady, Mr. Speaker, who talked down the economy. Who talked down the economy so that business surveys and confidence crashed through the floor. It was the Right Honourable Lady who confected the £22 billion black hole.
Pure fantasy.
A smokescreen that was only ever there in order to cover up for the fact that she and the Prime Minister reneged on their promises to the British people during the last general election. And a black hole that the OBR themselves, ironically at the government's behest, have said they will not legitimise. She chose to be reckless with a sliver of headroom against her fiddled targets. She borrowed and spent and taxed like it was the 1970s. Little wonder, Mr. Speaker, that the Chancellor has tanked the economy. Little wonder we have an emergency budget, all because of her choices. Now, the Chancellor likes to tour the television studios and tell everybody they should be thankful that she will not be ramping up taxes in this emergency budget as she did before. But that will be cold comfort to the millions up and down the country waiting in fear and trepidation for the start of the new tax year. Buckling under the burden of tax that will be rising to the highest tax burden on her watch in the history of our country. And so could I ask the Right Honourable Lady if, when she replies in a moment, she will give that much needed reassurance, particularly to businesses, that she will not be ramping up taxes still further in the autumn. Even a basic economist, Mr. Speaker, knows that if you tax something, you get less of it. You don't need to have worked at the Bank of England for 10 years, Mr. Speaker, to know that. So what did the Chancellor tax? She taxed jobs and wealth creation. She's destroyed livelihoods, businesses, clobbered big and small. Small companies, the backbone of our economy. Enterprise crushed on the altar of her ineptitude. The CIPD telling us a third of those businesses affected will shed labour. Morrison's losing 200 jobs, Tesco 400. Sainsbury's, 3,000 jobs lost. No wonder the Federation of Small Business say that outside of the pandemic, business confidence has been left at its lowest level on record. But it's not just businesses, Mr. Speaker. It's charities. It's GPs. It's pharmacists. It's those who transport children who have special educational needs. And it is hospices caring for the sick. Caring for the sick and the dying. In this House, Mr. Speaker, the Labour Party had the opportunity yesterday and last week to stop that. But they voted our amendments down. And we will never let their constituents forget it. Mr. Speaker, if you ramp up taxes, if you ramp up borrowing and spending without any commensurate improvement in productivity, it leads to growing inflation. And inflation has been increasing on this government's watch. It means that interest rates stay higher for longer. The Chancellor just now trumpeted the fact that there had been 3 interest rate cuts since the Labour Party came to office. She knows full well there should have been more than that had she managed. She knows full well, Mr. Speaker. She knows full well that interest rates are higher for longer because of the choices that she took. And this has led, Mr. Speaker, to servicing costs for our national debt, which is running at twice the defence budget. And today we have learned from the OBR that debt interest is to increase still further. None of this money, Mr. Speaker, is going to be spent on public services. It will be going down the drain. Mr. Speaker, the real black hole, Mr. Speaker, the real black hole is not the one the Chancellor invented. It is the one the Chancellor created. Yeah. It's not a central problem, Mr. Speaker, the fact that this Chancellor is a gambler. Even with her fiddled fiscal targets, she left way too little headroom. Way too little headroom. And it's not the truth that whilst the Right Honourable Lady said at the last budget that that was a once-in-a-Parliament reset, she rolled the dice on a wafer-thin margin, and she lost. Yeah. Reckless with her fingers crossed, she fiddled the targets and she missed them.
I'm not sure about the language we use. I think, Phil, I think there are better words and more constructive words the Shadow Chancellor would prefer to use. In
can I just point out, thank you, Mr. Chair, can I just point out that all of her fiscal headroom disappeared, not just some of it. In fact, she went underwater to the tune of £4.1 billion. Mr. Speaker, reeling from one fiscal event to the next is not a way to run the public finances. And breaking your fiscal rules to the extent that the Right Honourable Lady has in just 6 months is a public humiliation. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, could I briefly focus on defence spending? We on this side of the House welcome the fact that as we press the government to do, they will reach 2.5% of GDP by 2027. And we note the stepping stone along the way that the Right Honourable Lady has just announced. But we should go further than that. The 3% target should be brought forward to this Parliament. So can I ask the Right Honourable Lady, given the geopolitical tensions that she has raised, what provision has she made in her headroom, in her fiscal plans, for increasing defence spending more quickly in this Parliament, if that proves necessary? And could I ask her, would she scrap the absurd Chagos deal and put that money behind our armed forces? Mr. Speaker, the economy is in a perilous state. But there was a different way. There were different choices on taxing and spending and borrowing and on productivity and on welfare. And let me just say a few words on welfare. It was the privilege of my life, Mr. Speaker, to have served as the Secretary of State for Work and Pensions. And when it came to welfare reform, with that privilege came a deep responsibility. The responsibility for welfare reform to be properly thought through with a very clear plan. So I know they don't like it because it's an alien idea, Mr. Speaker, to the party opposite. So that we can be fair to the taxpayer, but equally fair to the many people up and down our country, some of whom are highly vulnerable. This was an approach on our watch that led to $5 billion of savings across the forecast period and 450,000 fewer people going on to long-term sickness and disability benefits as a direct consequence. And we would have gone further, much further, and we set out a clear plan, a clear plan. We set out a clear plan in our manifesto to do exactly that. But the party opposite rushed their changes. They had no plan. There was not a single mention of PIP, personal independence payments, in the Labour Party manifesto. When they got into office, they pussyfooted around and dithered. Why? Because it's deeply divisive within their rank and file. And then suddenly, when the Chancellor decided that she had run out of money, out the word went to find some savings in welfare, to scrabble around, to yank every lever possible. And the spectacle, frankly, Mr. Speaker, of what the OBR has said about the changes that were only announced last week by the Secretary of State for Work and Pensions is simply shambolic. Yes. We have gone from incompetence, Mr. Speaker, to chaos. Yes. There have been more changes in this policy than there were at the last minute to the profile of the Right Honourable Lady on LinkedIn. The result is the worst of all worlds. A wholly inadequate level of savings on welfare, with welfare costs still spiralling ever higher, and changes that were likely to harm many vulnerable people. So could I ask the Right Honourable Lady, when the Secretary of State for Work and Pensions came to the House last week with these changes, she did not provide an impact assessment. Was this because the OBR had not signed off the numbers? Was it because the department did not have enough time to produce one? Or was it only provided today, as many of us suspect, because this was thought to be a good time to bury bad news? Yeah. Mr. Speaker, the forecast for growth is down, for borrowing costs is up, for inflation is up, and business confidence has been smashed in a million pieces. This Chancellor constantly trying to blame forces beyond her control. The right response is not to duck responsibility, but to build a resilient economy. The Right Honourable Lady would have us believe that that is what she is doing. But how can we believe this Chancellor? How can we trust this Chancellor? She is the Chancellor who said she would not increase borrowing, but she did. She said she wouldn't change her fiscal rules, but she did. She said she wouldn't put up national insurance, but she did. She said she wouldn't cut winter fuel payment, but she did. She said she wouldn't tax farmers, but she did. And she said she would not move to more than one fiscal event a year, and she just has. And now we are all paying the price of her broken promises. Today's numbers confirm it. We are poorer and we are weaker. To govern, Mr. Speaker, is to choose. And this Chancellor has made all the wrong choices.
Yeah. Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Okay, well, I know that the Chancellor hasn't been in this role, Sarah Chancellor hasn't been in this role for very long, but I mean, at least he's not misquoting Shakespeare today. If this was a budget, then it would be the Leader of the Opposition responding. Now, I'm glad that she's still in her place. I know that she'll want to get back to her office for a lunchtime steak soon. But the Right Honourable Gentleman, he talks about budgets. Let me remind the party opposite that the only emergency budget we have seen in recent years was in response to the party's disastrous mini budget. a mini-budget that crushed the economy, sent mortgage bills spiralling and left a £22 billion black hole in our nation's finances. Now, they might have forgotten about the damage that they did to our country, but the British people never will. But as always, the Shadow Chancellor talked a lot, but he didn't offer a single alternative. He says he opposes our tax rises, but he can't tell us whether he would cut the NHS to reverse them. He says he wants economic growth, but they abstained on the very planning reforms that the OBR have said will kickstart growth. Now, Mr. Speaker, you don't change the country by abstaining. By sitting on the fence, you change the country by leading, by taking action, and that is what this government are doing. And Mr. Speaker, he says he wants businesses to trade, but he doesn't want us to talk to the second largest economy in the world, or indeed our biggest trading partners in the European Union. He simply isn't serious. 4 months into the job and he's got no clue. He wants to talk about growth, but he doesn't say anything about the fact that the OBR has upgraded growth next year and every single year after. He talks about pensioners, but he forgets that it's his party to scrap the triple lock, which we are protecting and which will mean the state pension rising next month by over £400. And Mr. Speaker, he talks about wages, but he forgets the fact that we are boosting wages by boosting the national living wage from next month. And Mr. Speaker, the Shadow Chancellor says nothing about living standards or this morning's fall in inflation, because the last Parliament was the worst on record and the OBR today have revised up their forecast for family finances. Mr. Speaker, working people are always better off with Labour. Now, he is learning something, because at least this time he's asked a couple of questions, so let me respond to them. He asked, what should the markets make? Well, what the market should see is that when I've been tested with a deterioration in the headroom, we have restored that headroom in full. That is the choices that I made. And he says that it's a slither of a headroom. Well, it's 50% more headroom than I inherited from the party opposite. When I was left with a slither of headroom, I rebuilt it after this government, last government, eroded it. That is the difference that we've made. And whilst they left the public finances and the public services a mess, we wiped the slate clean, which means we have the flexibility now to increase defence spending, as we have done in the as the leader of the Labour Party has done. The party opposite had 14 years to increase defence spending, and now they lately come to the party. And the Shadow Chancellor mentions welfare reform and his time at the Department for Work and Pensions. What a legacy. One in eight young people not in education, employment or training. 1,000 people a day going on to personal independence payments. And the OBR say today that welfare spending as a share of GDP will now start falling, a far cry from what we had under the party opposite. And, Mr. Speaker, the Shadow Chancellor speaks about employment. Well, the OBR say that employment will increase, that wages will increase and that living standards will increase. What a change after 14 years of the Conservative Party. Well, the world is changing and no one can be in any doubt about it. But the Conservative Party are stuck in the past, divided, out of touch and carping from the sidelines. They have no plan. No plan to kickstart growth, no plan to fix our public services, no plan to keep our country safe. The only plan for change they are working on is to change their party leader, and you can't blame them for that. So if they have no plan, let me remind them about ours. The minimum wage up, real wages up, house building up, NHS investment up, investment in our schools up, investment in our roads up, defence spending up. Every single one of those policies opposed by the party opposite. Opposed by the Conservatives, opposed by Reform, opposed by the SNP, opposed by the Liberal Democrats and opposed by the Greens. Mr. Speaker, it's the anti-growth coalition in action. They are the blockers, we are the builders, securing Britain's future, protecting working people and delivering change.
Chair of the Finance Committee, Dame Meg Hillier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, My right honourable friend inherited a very difficult challenge when she became Chancellor of the Exchequer last July. And she is absolutely right that the books need to balance. This is not other people's money we're spending, but taxpayers' money hard earned by our constituents. And she is right to be tough as Chancellor on this. We look forward to quizzing her at the Treasury Select Committee next week. I'm sure she's looking forward to it as much as we are. Mr. Speaker, the Chancellor announced an extra £2 billion a year in capital spending, and she talked about extra defence spending. Can she give some more detail about where she hopes that £2 billion a year extra will go?
Chancellor.
I thank my honourable friend for that question, and I indeed look forward to attending the Treasury Select Committee next week. I was pleased to have served on the Treasury Select Committee in the past, and it's a pleasure to give evidence to you. We will set out in the spending review, my right honourable friend, the Chief Secretary, will set out in the spending review the allocation of the additional capital money, but I was able to announce today £2.2 billion into defence from next year, as well as £2 billion as a down payment to build the affordable and social housing that we need. Two examples of the priorities of this government to get Britain building and to secure our national security.